Speaking Out on ABC Local Radio.
We are here.
Indigenous culture, lifestyle and current affairs with Larissa Behrendt.
Listeners are advised tonight's program may include language that may be considered offensive.
For the past 2 weeks, the Western Australian town of Kalgoorlie has seen community unrest following the tragic death of a 14-year-old boy. Elijah Doherty was struck by a vehicle while riding a scooter, and a local man was subsequently charged with manslaughter. What followed was a protest by more than 200 members of the Aboriginal community outside the Kalgoorlie courthouse. Community broadcaster Debbie Carmody has stated publicly that race relations in the centre have been strained in recent years. Debbie, from the Indigenous community point of view, what were the events that led up to this tragic death of Elijah Doherty?
For a few years now, we have had many racially motivated murders in this town, with many of them unsolved, and we are talking about murders that are absolutely violent, which I think is an indication of the intensity of hatred. For example, a Wangai woman was dragged by her feet behind a vehicle until she died. An elderly Wangai man had his skull smashed by young white people using broken cement footpath pieces. Very violent and intense hatred that goes with it. With those two examples, there was justice, but there are many other violent deaths in this town that have not been solved and justice has not been served. So for the last 2 years, two local social media sites have posted comments that are derogatory to Wangai and Original Nations people. The racial vilifications from these sites are based on racist stereotypes and racial profiling. They not only vilify, but they incite hatred and racist attacks on our Wangai youth. They openly encourage people to murder our youth and pose questions such as, how many bodies would it take to fill a mine shaft? There have been numerous complaints about the sites to the appropriate authorities, but the complaints were always dismissed. Members of that site would take photos of our youth riding their motorbikes, or images of youth walking down the street, and then a barrage of racist comments would follow. One of those photos was an image of Elijah Doherty standing with two others with his two motorbikes, which ended up being stolen. One of the comments that followed stated, "Run the fuckers over." 2-3 weeks later, they got him.
It's a dreadful thing that when you say it like that, it just defies belief that something like that happens in Australia. But, you know, and the level of violence that you talk about is quite extreme. Yet when the Aboriginal community protests against this level of racial discrimination, this level of racial vilification, this pattern of violent behaviour, the behaviour is characterised as a riot. What are your reflections on that aspect of the mainstream coverage of the Indigenous community reaction?
You don't call it a riot after 230 years of systemic oppression. You call it justice when people start to fight back. That day began with people gathering to support the family in court. You could feel the great sorrow. It was deep and it was quiet, but it was loud. The court security decided they had to search people. Why? Then the court security decided that people couldn't be in court. So everyone was ushered out. And there they stood on the street. Under the great sorrow, there was an anger. Anger that a 14-year-old boy was killed by a man in his 50s. Anger that he was only charged with manslaughter. Anger that two social media sites openly encouraged racist attacks and murders on young Wangai boys. Anger is a sign that something needs to change. So what happened was not a riot. No other building was damaged in the main street of Kalgoorlie. There were only two targets, both representations of the justice system, and only two targets were damaged, the courthouse and a police vehicle. It was not planned. It was something that just happened. It was an outpouring of grief, of great sorrow, of hurt and pain. Anger is the voice of the voiceless. Our youth are tired and very weary of social injustices. What happened on that Tuesday was a statement, "Black lives do matter. It shouldn't be dangerous to be a young black male in this town. They were saying, stop killing us. They were saying, we will not comply anymore. We will not go quiet. We will not submit. We are going to make a stand. You know that something is terribly wrong if the pain, sorrow, and outrage of a people makes you more uncomfortable than murder itself.
You can obviously see this as something that's been at the heart of life in Kalgoorlie, as you talk about it in a broader historical and social context. But obviously there are resonances with other parts of Australia. I'm thinking particularly of the death in custody in Palm Island and the subsequent community reaction, but also the way in which other victims of crime around the country, the Bowraville children, don't get justice. What are your views on how what's happening in Kalgoorlie is actually a snapshot of a broader national picture?
It absolutely is. You know, we've had police barging through doors, arresting our children for damage. Okay, yes, we knew that was coming. But why are the police so aggressive and demeaning and have this air of superiority? It's constant. There is no let up. And like Palm Island and other areas around Australia, the level of hatred and this inability to see us as humans just does not exist. It's quite bizarre. And you could say it's like they have a mental illness called racism. It is a fear of colour. Now, that's not normal.
The other thing that I think people are wondering is, after such an emotional moment, such high emotions, how is the Aboriginal community in Kalgoorlie coping now?
It's sorry time, and we have gone through feelings of shock, horror, sadness, disbelief, anger, and now it's sorry time. The campfires are still burning strongly at the sorry camp, and we are feeling the warmth from the wider community in Kalgoorlie-Boulder, who visit with flowers and food, who come and sit with us, who talk and express their sadness and disbelief at what happened. But we are waiting. Our eyes, and I'm sure the eyes of Australia, are upon the justice system, so we're waiting to see if justice will be served.
Now, an event like this, as you've alluded to, never happens without a context. How deep is the racial divide in Kalgoorlie?
Well, this is interesting because historically Kalgoorlie had the highest number of no votes in the 1967 referendum.
Oh, isn't that interesting?
Yeah, so the racial divide is historical and it runs very deep. And I think it was in 2014 that the Human Rights Commission came to Kalgoorlie and produced a rights and responsibilities report. The aim of the visit at that time was to seek and listen to people's views on how well their rights and freedoms are protected in Australia. And it was also an opportunity for the Human Rights Commission to identify systemic human rights issues and to consider possible ways to address these issues. And also, I'm thinking that Tim Muirhead and Kim Bridge came to Kalgoorlie around the same time to develop a reconciliation action plan with the City Council in response to racism in Kalgoorlie. So it's always been there. The racial divide is very deep. And it comes from small sections of the community, including businesses, government departments and agencies, the police, negative portrayals of Wangai people in mainstream media, and so on. For example, the 2000 Olympic Games in Sydney, people were actually booing Cathy Freeman in hotels in this town as she ran the 400 metres. Just amazing. And apart from what happens on the street, when there are inter-agency meetings with government departments and agencies, the topics of conversation is always around Wangai people. And we are always spoken about in terms of being in poverty, uneducated, unable to help ourselves, drunks, hard to deal with, and so on. At a recent meeting with the State Minister for Education, Peter Collier, regarding 58 suspensions in the first 3 months at the Kalgoorlie-Boulder Community School, senior officers of the WA police could only speak about 20 Wangai students who they accused of committing most crimes in the city. What about the other 38 students? So the focus is always on original nations people and how bad we all are. Institutionalised racism plays a big part in the racial divide, because it is always about how to control Wangai people by keeping us in boxes. If you speak out against the stereotypes, people raise their eyebrows and think difficult Aborigine, a troublemaker. So no one listens, and people want to keep applying white constructs to Wangai society and social structures, and of course that doesn't work.
You've given us a really good snapshot in that overview, that reflection of some of the broader issues facing the Indigenous community in Kalgoorlie. But it's been my experience that there's always a counter-narrative to that, that you have a community that's actually very strong. There are people there that are working on these issues, the ones you've identified in their own way from a community grassroots perspective. Can you give us a bit of a snapshot of that side of the Aboriginal community in Kalgoorlie?
Yeah, there are some interesting community initiatives that are happening. For example, in a town called Laverton, the whole community got on board and started working with youth there. And in a six-month period, only one child committed a crime. And so what the community in Laverton, which is 4 hours' drive north of Kalgoorlie, what they were doing, like everyone got involved, the police, the council, community elders, the school, and they were running projects, after-school projects, on-the-weekend projects, getting kids out bush, getting them involved in social and cultural activities. And Original Nations Community Media, Dumabulka, has been a part of that. So we worked with children and got them involved in doing an emu dance for the opening of NAIDOC Week. And when children first got involved, they come in with their heads down and all the rest of it. But by the time they were up on stage performing in front of 400 people, they were walking very tall and very proud. So what we're wanting to develop is a arts and culture economy. And so it's very, very important that when our children participate in these things, they get paid. And so those children got paid, and they want to get involved in more arts and culture projects, which we're doing and other community groups are doing, along with Anglo Gold Ashanti, a mining company who are just a great, great support in this community. But we also want to apply what has happened in Laverton. We want to apply that here in Kalgoorlie.
What needs to happen to reassure the Indigenous community in Kalgoorlie that the criminal justice system will deliver, in this instance, justice for Elijah and his family?
We can't reassure the Indigenous community that the criminal justice system will deliver justice for Elijah Doughty, because history has shown that the justice system does not deliver justice. But hopefully, with the eyes of Australia upon this case, some sort of justice will come out of it.
Debbie Carmody, thank you so much for being with us on Speaking Out this evening and talking to us at what must be a really difficult time in your community.
Thank you.
That's Debbie Carmody, community broadcaster, and a very powerful voice from her community in Kalgoorlie.